Northwestern University, in cooperation with the Mutual Broadcasting System, presents The Reviewing Stand.
Northwestern University is celebrating its centennial year, 100 years of service to the nation and the great Northwest. The Reviewing Stand will present many programs of unusual interest. We invite you to listen.
Today, The Reviewing Stand discusses population and food pressure in the Orient. Our unrehearsed give-and-take discussion will center around the problems created by overpopulation and food shortages in the Far East. Now our moderator, Leighton Boren, director of the Reviewing Stand, will introduce participants in today's discussion. Mr. Boren.
Our first speaker by transcription is George F. Kennan, counselor to the State Department and top-ranking authority on the Soviet Union. The remarks that Mr. Kennan now makes are taken from a speech delivered at the first Centennial Conference on International Understanding held at Northwestern University on January 29th of this year. Mr. Kennan.
Now let's take first this question of population. Now, in 1750, just before the formation of our republic, the population of the world was estimated at 660 million. 100 years ago, by 1851, it had risen to something more nearly 1 billion. Today, in 1951, it is estimated at over 2,200,000,000. Now today, large portions of the earth have reached so severe a state of overpopulation in terms of their own resources that they can survive only by making out of their territories workshops and exchanging their products for the food and raw materials they need. Now, strangely enough, these overpopulated workshop areas, despite their tremendous economic vulnerability and despite all the shocks that occurred to them during the recent war, and most of them got very severe ones, have been able to keep going and have been able to maintain a vigorous civilization with our help, to be sure, in these recent years. But there are other areas which seem to be in an even worse way. And these are the ones which are both backward industrially and overpopulated. Now, they are ridden to a large extent by traditional prejudices and behavior patterns which weigh very heavily on their ability even to approach the solution of their problems by increasing productivity. And actually, as things stand today, there is no evidence that increased productivity alone would have more than a temporary palliative effect on their problem. Because in those countries, population is constantly pressing against a ceiling created by the supply of food and other things necessary for existence. And fertility is such that population will readily rush in to fill any new area or vacuum that's created by the raising of that ceiling. The only answer here that I can see, the only material answer, would seem to lie in some form of limitation of births, and most of those areas are so far from that that we can dismiss the possibility entirely, I think, from this discussion. Now, no one can speak with any certainty about these matters. They're tremendous exceptions to anything that you want to say about them. They're exceptions to what I've just said here. There are no problems more baffling or more elusive than these questions of the relationship of population to food supply and to other fundamental conditions. But it is my impression that there are large and significant portions of the earth today where the combination of all these things has created a highly unsatisfactory and even tragic state of affairs, characterized by immense restlessness and bewilderment among the respective people. And I think we have to adjust ourselves to the prospect that a large segment of the world's population, in terms of numbers, is destined to continue to live in a state of bitter competition for the possession of inadequate resources. That this is going to produce, to continue to produce, reactions on their part which will not be happy ones, will not be similar to our habits of thought in this country, which will seem unnatural to us, and which will inevitably place limitations on the degree of intimacy that we can hope to achieve rapidly and hastily between ourselves and themselves. This is the essence of one of our great problems of foreign affairs, namely, our relations with the people whose lives are marked as much by technical backwardness and material poverty as our lives are marked by technical advance and material abundance. And we shouldn't underrate the depth of that problem. There is nothing more difficult than for a rich man to talk to a poor man and have the poor man listen to him respectfully. And when we talk to these people, that relationship comes into it, and I think we've got to be very, very careful to try to talk to them in terms of their problems, not of our dreams and preconceptions here, and not to promise them too much or to lead them to believe that we have answers which we do not have.
Thank you, Mr. Cannon. Continuing this Northwestern University Reviewing Stand discussion are E.B. Espenshade, Jr., Associate Professor of Geography at Northwestern University, D. Gale Johnson, Associate Professor of Economics at the University of Chicago, and L. Dudley Stamp, Professor of Social Geography at the London School of Economics. Gentlemen, you will remember that Mr. Cannon said, a large segment of the world's population, in terms of numbers, is destined to continue to live in a state of bitter competition for possession of inadequate resources. When he makes this statement, Stamp, what areas of the world does he have in mind?
Well, I imagine, of course, that he's thinking of those many areas which we call underdeveloped, especially in the tropics. But I take it that this morning we're really going to consider a part of the area concerned, that's to say, the Orient. Now, as I see it, we've got India and Pakistan, on the one hand, with certainly over 400 million people. We've got China, on the other hand, also with over 400 million people. And then there's a block of countries in between, let's call them Southeast Asia, and the continuation into the islands of Indonesia. They're rather different.
Well, yes, it's quite true that they are quite different, particularly the Southeast Asia countries, because they are a large-scale, important producers of agricultural raw materials, such as rubber, which they export. And before this last war, Burma and one or two other countries were also important exporters of rice. And they essentially have far more resources in terms of their population than either India or China.
Well, in addition, locally within the Southeastern Asia area, there are some areas of intense population pressure, such as in Java and in parts of French Indochina. Although, as Stamp says, there are many areas which perhaps could be developed and support a much larger population in this region.
Well, let's look at it in this way. Let's take India and Pakistan. There's less than 2 acres per head of population of land of all sorts. And the actual productive land on which those people live is considerably less than 1 acre. Now, let's take the relatively prosperous possessor of resources like Burma. Now, they've got 14 or 15 acres to play with, so there is a contrast. It's the great overpopulated, if you like, densely populated country of India and Pakistan that I think we ought to look at.
Yes, one might contrast the figures for India with our own, where we have considerably in excess of 2 acres of very fertile land, in large part, per person in this country. Much more than twice as much land per person as does India. And this shows up definitely in the amount of food we have available. We eat in this country over 3,300 calories a day, whereas the Indians do well if they get 2,000 calories a day.
Well, why do these conditions of population and food supply, in Kennan's words, make for immense restlessness and bewilderment? Stan?
Well, I should say that what you've really got there, people are living near the starvation level. And if they get a bad harvest, if the rains fail, as does frequently happen in India, they are going to have millions reduced to death by
starvation. Actually happened this year, didn't it?
It did, yes, and it's constantly happening in different years. Well, now, when you've got people who are living under conditions of that sort, and someone comes along and says, now, why not try something new? Why not try communism? You can't be worse off. You see, there's an immense temptation to try something. It's like the drowning man clutching at the straw. And that's where I see the danger.
And Espenshade?
I grant you that these people have a sense of futility and injustice around them. And it seems to me there are two ways of looking at this problem of poverty here. In the first place, you can explain the poverty on an ideological basis. You can say that the poverty is due to the fact that the landlords grind down the farmer and their high taxes and so forth. Or you can look at it that the poverty in these areas is due to technological reasons, that you have a large population dependent almost entirely on agriculture, and that agriculture is essentially a whole agriculture.
Well, I'd like to refer to what I think we might call the cycle of poverty. You take the ordinary Indian peasant cultivator. He hasn't the money to buy good seed, he hasn't the money to buy fertilizer, he hasn't the money to buy implements. All right? He plants his poor seed and he gets a poor yield. He eats all the food he can produce. He's got no surplus for sale. Therefore, at the end of the year, he's got no money. He's probably still more in debt than previously to his landlord. He's probably got a daughter that he's got to marry off and provide a dowry. And there he is, this cycle of poverty. Now, we're going to break into that.
Well, have the communists broken into it in China in any way?
Well, the communists in China, of course, have attempted to solve the problem, but I doubt it's too early for us to tell what they are going to be able to do in the future. But they've divided the agricultural lands of northern China, but to divide those lands up is not going to increase your agricultural productivity. They have a certain advantage, however. They have a strong immediate appeal to the Chinese peasant, and that immediate appeal gives them certain cohorts that follow very blindly because they're gaining immediately. But they're not going to answer the problem unless they can increase the productivity in these areas.
Yes, the problem of increasing productivity is very seldom, if ever, solved by making your farm smaller and smaller, because each farmer generally will have less capital and consequently cannot buy the fertilizer, cannot even use the very simplest improved techniques. And I think we should not forget here that the problem of overpopulation or poor food supplies is also a consequence of essential imbalance between the number of people and the quantity of land. It's not only low productivity from the land, but the fact that the land itself is limited in supply relative to the number of people.
Well, I want to make certain distinctions there. Now, as far as India is concerned, the acre yields of crops are very low indeed. And I think that there could be an enormous increase in output in food in India from existing land if only we could break into that cycle, say, by starting off with fertilizer. Now, as far as I know China, it's a different story there. Well, they've got this intense cultivation. They'll call them all gardeners rather than farmers, and they really do use their land very intensively.
Yes.
No problem.
Yes, the Indian situation may be very comparable to the one that the Japanese faced over the past 40, 50 years, in which they have increased their yields by at least 40% by just doing the sorts of things you've mentioned. More fertilizer, somewhat better seeds, in fact, considerably better seeds, and by a little bit better techniques otherwise. And this was very important.
I grant you, Stamp, that yields in India are considerably higher than they are, considerably lower than they are in China. But even in the case of China, there's room for considerable improvement in your agricultural productivity. You compare Chinese yields with those of the intensive agriculture of Europe, you could have 20-30% improvement in yield in China.
Well, may I break in there, because I'm not quite sure about that. It's certainly true of India, but we must not judge these Oriental countries from our standards. You know, we're thinking in terms of mechanized farming and so on. What one has got to get there is not any saving in labor. One's got to get this increase in yield from the small units, and I'm not even sure that I agree that there's anything wrong in getting smaller units. Intensive cultivation by hand, that's the point.
Yes, but you had very intensive cultivation by hand even in China prior to the reduction in the size of units in most places. And, but I would quite agree with you that mechanization in our modern sense of Western Europe and the United States is not the answer, because it may well drive down yields as contrasted to what they could be by hand cultivation with good techniques and good seed.
You gentlemen believe then that it isn't simply a problem of overpopulation. That's been changed?
Well, as Stamp has already said, there is this problem of underproduction, although I feel that basically the problem is still one of overpopulation. You take the farms of China. If you will find that the per capita production is about twice as great on a farm of 10 acres as it is on a farm of about 3 acres. And you want some excess of production here in order to increase the standard of living of these people. To divide the farms merely means that you have less per capita production. So that underproduction isn't the only answer to it. I still think that there's a strong case here for overpopulation in these regions, Stan.
Well, I'm not sure that I agree with the definition of overpopulation. You see, I come from a country, from Britain, where we've got less than half the area of land per head that there is in India. So our problem, if you're right, is even far worse.
Yes, but over the years you've been able to import up to half of your food supply.
That's true.
Do it by exchanging your manufactured goods for it.
Now, a few minutes ago, Mr. Kennan pointed out that the Orient is ridden by traditional prejudices and behavior patterns that tend to block any attempts to solve the problems caused by overpopulation and inadequate food supplies.